Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
turn, I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years, they have fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon Kamajan, and we want to welcome you to another outstanding, power-packed edition of Your World News coming up. And again, and I hate to do this, but I have to apologize for the long hiatus we've had. But, you know, we've been working on a multitude of projects, as you know, with Critical Insight, the new video program known as No Words Barred. Where myself and co-host Dr. Joseph Richardson, you know, chime in on a myriad topics from a radical, revolutionary, progressive, whatever adjective that you want to put in there that means that we're going very, very forward and very, very left from a black perspective, from an African perspective. And so hopefully you've have been tuning into that. If you aren't hip to the show, just visit us at yourworldnews.org, and you'll find a link that will take you to all of the most recent episodes. But we've been a little bit negligent with where it all started, and that's the radio blog known as Your World News. But we're back in full effect, and I'm in a studio full of student activists that I'm sure are going to continue to keep this engine rolling along. This is the first of several, because they fully understand that if we're going to see some social change, if we're going to really build this thing up, we've got to continue to be as consistent as possible. And I haven't been as consistent as I should have been with this radio show. But like I said, that's old news. We're going to move forward, and we're going to keep it rolling. So with that being said, I want to turn to my right. We have a young brother here who's a student, college student. They're all university students. And if you can just quickly go around and introduce yourself just a little bit something about yourself, and we'll keep it moving.
Hello, listeners. My name is Ryan Brown, and I'm a student. I'm going into computer engineering.
My name is Jana Robina. I'm a senior psychology and French double major. I'm Kenyan.
Hi, I'm Caroline. I'm a criminology and African American studies double major, junior.
Hi, my name is Lorraine. I'm a junior economics major.
Hi, my name is Soliana Lako. I'm a senior economics and computer science student, and I was born and raised in Ethiopia.
All right, so we got two East Africans in the house today. So, with that being said, we're gonna get started. I want to throw out to you guys. You've seen the recent presidential debates, not just the raving mad people within the Republican Party, but also many of the disingenuous Democrats within the Democratic Party. We've seen the recent debates, seen, heard them. They continue to go on, as they continue to contest for the presidency of the United States of America, which, I'll put my in that. These are my opinions. And in this case, since I'm the founder of Your World News, I can say that the views expressed by Solomon Kamajan actually do represent Your World News. But they don't necessarily represent the students in the room. I'll let them speak for themselves. But it continues to be this two-party dictatorship that has caused more and more people to feel disenfranchised because, especially looking at the Democratic Party and the relationship the Democratic Party has with the black community, which is much of like a scorned lover, that just goes out, promises you all these kind of things, but yet continues to go out and slander all over the place, but that other person, male or female, man or woman, continually take them back, despite the other ones philandering and so forth. And, I could say perhaps the Democratic Party and the black community have never truly even been wedded. It's kind of been this illusionary thing. It's been this box, this Trojan box, Trojan horse full of hollow, empty rhetoric and lies that continually to dupe the black community. Because I say to black folks, what has the Democratic Party done for you lately? And I do not, if you've listened enough, I do not mean to drive anybody towards those right wing, white supremacists on the other side. But Ryan, and I'll throw it to you. It's this whole thing where you can tell that oftentimes we just in general, let's just say, not even say black people, just human beings in general, progressive folks, they just really want to see some progressive, radical change in terms of the social complexion of how things are done in the U.S., which if they change, would actually change how things are done in the world, because the U.S. is the largest empire in the world, is the greatest imperialist force, waging wars every, you know, few years or so that continue to take life after life after life. And we'll get into this. We'll get into the recent news about Barack Obama, you know, proudly saying that that they're going to continue to keep at least 5,500 troops on the ground in Afghanistan. But when people say the lesser, Ryan, you make a good point, Ryan. You make a good point. Yeah, they haven't done anything tangible. Yes, they've never really adopted a platform to attack and eviscerate institutional racism. Yes, they've never really, you know, been, you know, out there in terms of being champions against, you know, police brutality and structural racism, all these kind of things. But they're the lesser of two evils. And I guess that has a lot to do with, when people don't deconstruct that statement itself, it has a lot to do with kind of how their critical thinking, you know, antenna have been kind of decapitated, right? Because if you vote for the lesser of two evils, you're still ultimately voting for evil. You're still ultimately voting for evil. And we would never choose a life partner that way. Say, oh, you know, this is who I want to spend the rest of my life with. All right, this is who I want to spend the rest of my life with. I have this individual and this individual. This individual will cheat on me 10 times a month, but this one will only cheat on me twice a month. No one would ever accept that. So yeah, I don't want to be with anyone that's going to do that. No one would ever accept that. It's like Malcolm said, should I be happy that you stuck the knife in my back, you know, 9 inches, and then pulled it out, and you pulled it out, you know. 7 inches? I mean, it's still in my back. You still stuck it in there. You know, is that progress? So, you know, what do you have to say about that?
I, for one, think that, you know, these are the same Democratic parties that were here since the slave days. It's, you know, sometimes they swap on different issues. But for one, you know, the Democratic Party was never meant to support the African-American community. So we have to consider, like, what are they supporting? They're supporting, you know, the workers, the people inside the middle class, but not necessarily black people. And so you have black people that are still, you know, not where we are supposed to be in terms of economic status with what we were hindered with throughout history. And then you have the two same major parties in power versus, you know, basically what I'm saying is that, you know, we have to push forth efforts to change the views of the current parties, or at least have more parties go into power that can actually change stuff in America.
Like knowing about, for instance, the Green Party, that's in existence,
exactly,
right there. The party of there's another party for liberation, socialism and liberation that's out there that a lot of folks don't know that, you know, they, you know, and these parties, you know, if you look at the Green Party, I believe their website is gp.org or gp.com, but you can just Google the Green Party, and they have, you know, a platform that is completely anti-imperialism, anti-prison industrial complex, anti-military industrial complex, obviously, you know, pro, you know, women's rights across the board, and you know, so but a lot of people don't know of these, and I'll throw it out just an example. Several years ago, in 2008, you know, and I'll put it out there, I never voted for Barack Obama. I voted, you know, in 2008 for a black woman by the name of Cynthia McKinney, who spent 12 years in Congress as a Democratic congresswoman from the state of Georgia, and then, you know, She left that party, was forced out of that party, joined the Green Party, ran for president in 2008, and it was interesting. There was at a BSU meeting, you know, you have all these black students in there, and they put up the issues. And at the time, it was McCain, McCain, they put McCain and Obama up there. And obviously, most people in America didn't even know, you know, anything about the Green Party or that Cynthia McKinney was running, despite the fact her long history, you know, at that point, 12 years in you know, in Congress. But they put up the different issues, and they blinded the names of the individuals. So most people were able to tell you, to guess that, okay, these issues, this has got to be McCain. And they were right. So then it gets to McKinney and Obama. So McKinney's platform, they actually thought it was Obama. They thought it was Obama, right? They're like, oh, that's got to be a Barack Obama. And they were wrong. It was sent to McKinney. Very progressive, progressive platform. Wants to, you know, institute a Department of Peace. I mean, all this stuff. And then so once everything was unveiled, like now, and where the most of the room thought that, you know, McKinney's was actually Obama's and vice versa, I said, okay, now how many of you who initially were going to, you know, said that you were going to vote for Barack Obama, which was virtually the entire room, how many of you now that you know this platform is Cynthia McKinney's and you thought it was your candidate Obama, how many of you are willing to vote for her? And there's probably about two hands that are raised. So the follow-up question is why? Oh, well, you know, all these excuses, why I can't vote for someone who doesn't have a chance of winning and this, that, and the other. And like, well, what if everyone's thinking that? How about voting your conscience? How does it feel if you look in the mirror and you say, I voted for somebody when I knew there was a better option whose platform were more in line with my values? How do you reconcile that? You know, so, you know, I appreciate what you're saying. Anybody else want to chime in on this issue, the whole Democrat, Republican, you know? And if not, we can talk about what was mentioned on the platform, I mean, on the debate. Who's watched the debates? Who's been watching the debates? So what issues were pick a debate. Let's start with the Democrats, right? That was the most recent one. What are some of the issues that were very salient to you that you thought were important issues that came up or issues that didn't come up that are important to you or lastly issues that did come up but you were really unimpressed with the approach for most of the candidates? And I know there's a lot of talk with Bernie Sanders, who's actually put forth a lot of progressive rhetoric, you know, being put out there, you know, attacking Wall Street, breaking up the banks, you know, and, you know, reeling in, you know, making, ensuring that folks have, you know, universal health care, universal education, you know, so forth, you know. Did you want to say something, Sarah?
I don't like the question that they asked about, do Black Lives Matter or do all lives matter? I feel like those things shouldn't compete with each other. I don't think those two things should be. You shouldn't compare Black lives to all lives because then you're saying Black lives aren't all lives. You're kind of taking it out of it. When Black Lives Matter wasn't supposed to be about Black. It was supposed to be about Black people, but saying we're just as important, we're just as valuable. Now we're special, but we're just as valuable because we've been undervalued our whole existence in this country. So when people say, oh, Black lives, it's all lives, well, you're discrediting us once again by saying all lives matter, not Black lives. I think also the response was kind of corny. It's like, oh, of course Black Lives Matter. But yeah. It wasn't genuine. It was just a genuine the way she said it.
Yeah, especially since they had, like, you know, Clinton. And that's a really good point that you bring up. Clinton, you know, to that point has not said anything about Black Lives Matter. We know that Martin O'Malley, you know, former governor of Maryland, former mayor of Baltimore City, when he was asked, you know, several weeks ago, you know, his response was, oh, yeah, all lives matter. All lives matter. Well, we're talking about do Black lives matter? And just like you said, you know, you have a demographic of people who have been consistently subjected to institutional racism. Quite frankly, the institutional racism that has taken a lot of lives, you know, by way of police brutality and so many other things. You know, lack of health care and so forth, in a very disproportionate manner. So, this is a response. Like, Black Lives Matter is a response to what this country has, you know, what this country has been subjecting black people to for such a long, long period of time. So, yeah, I definitely feel your, you know, your sentiment when it comes to, you know, kind of indignation with the response, the kind of cavalier response. And it was almost like a very political response, like, I know I've got to say this. I'm in front of millions and millions of people. I know I got to say this. So even though my rhetoric, my actions are not really going to back it up, especially if I get elected, but I know I got to say this. You were going to say something?
Just like the hypocrisy of O'Malley saying that, you know, Black Lives Matter, like giving that sentiment when you know, like even Anderson like pointed to this, like you literally put 1 in 6 Baltimore residents in prison, like, and it was literally over anything and everything. Like you were just raining terror on your town. Like, how could we trust you to govern an entire country when, you know, your entire governorship has shown us that you completely don't understand the intersection between poverty, race, and like the whole epidemic that's been going on.
Building up, you know, he put out the plan to build up a juvenile prison. You know, he wanted to spend millions of dollars to do that. He incarcerated, it was something like, you know, 1 in 6 adults were being incarcerated in Baltimore City when he was the mayor of Baltimore. Really tough on crime, which is like that code, we're going to hyper police, you know, we're going to hyper police your communities. And usually it means that black communities are going to be hyper policed. So yeah, your assessment of Martin O'Malley, yeah, his actions, as they say, actions speak louder than his words. His actions and his history as a politician really hasn't, in any shape, form, or fashion, doesn't really give any sense of hope for black folks that want to throw their vote behind him. If they do, that there's going to be actually some kind of tangible, you know, positive change, you know, if this guy is elected, you know, president of the United States of America. Anybody else?
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, when she was saying how we were just as valuable, like, everyone keeps on responding with all lives matter, all lives matter. If all lives matter, no one would have to say Black Lives Matter. We say Black Lives Matter because he consistently shoot us down and lock us up and treat us like our lives are not important. You base this country off of the fact that our lives were not important as long as we were working for you. So how can you say all lives matter if you don't act like all lives matter?
What do you say to the and I'll put it out there, what do you say to the racist white liberal or conservative, and I say that because they're not going to tell you that they're racist, but you know they must be harboring some racist sentiments when their response to what you just said what about the black on black violence? Don't you care about that? Don't you care about black on black violence? Why are you all of a sudden now just talking about police brutality? Not that that doesn't happen, you know, but look how many black, you know, young black men are being killed in Chicago. What do you say to that?
I would tell them to look at all the white people that are attacking other white people.
Look
at every other race. Crime is interracial. No one's going. People attack the people within their community. Unfortunately, you're going to attack someone who's around you. And usually, the people who are around you look like you. Black on black crime. It's been singled out like this. Big fat anomaly, like, oh, we just all hate each other. No, white people attack other white people. Hispanic people attack other Hispanic people. Anyone of any race is probably going to attack someone of their same race. It's not just black people.
Right. And it's 84% of white people that are murdered
by other white people.
But here's the other thing is that when a black man, you know, kills another black man, most likely, number one, he's going to be caught for that crime. He'll be indicted, and he'll stand trial. And most likely, he's going to do some jail time for that. However, when a police officer commits that same crime, even on camera, murders a black person on camera, most of the time they're not even going to get indicted. Meaning they're not even going to go to trial. And if they do go to trial, like Johan Mezelis, who shot execution style Oscar Grant in the back, several years ago in Oakland, California, he didn't even do a year time. He didn't even do a year. He did not do a year, and he's a free man and has been a free man for some time now. So that's why, in many ways, they're mutually exclusive. And here's the other thing, and I'll end on this, and feel free to chime in. When you look at, it's crazy when folks want to talk about. And yes, and it doesn't mean, right, it doesn't mean that Carolyn or Robina or Ryan that or Solomon, that any of us in here, that we don't care about violence in inner cities, all right? Innocent life lost is an innocent life lost. It's a precious thing, and that can never be brought back. And so, yes, there have to be some structured things on multiple fronts to decrease that. One of those things is pumping more resources, jobs, and improving the economy in these communities where young people are not forced into these underground economies, because that's the only way they can see themselves to sustain themselves, right? But the other part of it is that when we talk about the legacy of violence, see, I want to bring up this, you know, when we talk, why isn't that they don't ever talk about the legacy of white violence? Because far more human beings, I'm talking about by the millions, far more human beings have been killed by way of colonization, shadow slavery, you know, domestic terrorism, by the way, the KKK and neo-Nazi groups. I mean, we could go on and on, but it's never seen as pathological. That, yo, these MFers are crazy. They're crazy. There's a pathology of killing people of color in the white community going back hundreds and hundreds of years. Why is it's never labeled that? It's always, oh, that's, you know, even when someone blows up a building like, you know, Timothy McVeigh did in Oklahoma City. No, we're not going to put a massive dragnet out there and looking for every, white man between the ages of 18 and 31 or whatever. Never, ever. So this is why we're doing this, because you'll never hear this kind of conversation on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News. You'll never hear this conversation. You're only going to hear it on independent, progressive media, you know, community-based outlets, whether it's Your World News or Black Agenda Report or so many others. But you're not going to hear this kind of rhetoric there. Does anyone else want to chime on that? Carolyn?
I just want to say that at the end of the day, the main reason we crack down so hard on the police is because these are people who have been tasked to protect and serve us. How am I supposed to trust you to protect me if I'm afraid that you're going to shoot me just because I run a red light, or just because I'm driving 1 mile over the speed limit? Like, there's no reason why I should sit in my car and be more afraid of a cop than most people. Most people would claim they're afraid if they see a large black man walking down the sidewalk. I feel more safe with that than if a cop stops me. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
and it's just like, what is the greater implication that we keep seeing these images of police brutality? Like, how are we as black people going to react when we do interact with the police? Like, wouldn't they deem our fearfulness as suspicious? Because, like, this whole interaction is not necessarily, like, evidence-based. Like, it's all about, like, the police perspective. Like, oh, they did something. And the whole thing about, like, black criminality, you know, it's just, like, we really have to address, like, the way that cops are being trained. Like, how are they, like, coming to understand, like, all these, you know, like, really, like, innocent things are considered crimes in their eyes? Like, it has to start at that level.
How are we the scary ones when you brought us here? Are we the ones who are scary? I don't get that. I don't know how they fear black people. We've been people that have been brutalized and you know, abused, but they have a fear of us, and I find that's so strange. It's like the boogeyman is afraid of the little kid. I'm afraid of the boogeyman is afraid of the little kid. Why?
Because they have appropriated our images, just like they did our Native American brothers and sisters. They appropriate that, exactly, without a doubt. It makes no sense. It's only in an upside-down world would the people who have been the most barbaric be the ones telling, you know, civilizations that have been, you know, living, you know, in virtual symmetry, you know, between man and woman and nature, you know, for thousands of years as the Native Americans were, as you know, African cultures were. Only an upside-down world where the person that comes in and steals your land, burns you alive, burns men, women, and children alive in wigwams and teepees and so forth, you know, raping women, you know, mutilating, you know, scalping folks. Only an upside world would that person be able to have the temerity and the authority to say, I'm here to civilize you. Civilize me? Civilize me. You're massacring my people. You civilize me. I need civilization, but it's because they have appropriated that image, and so therefore they can create the movies in Hollywood. The white guy on the back of the horse, you know, John Wayne rolling through, and Native Americans, you know, seen as the bad guys, you know, and the guy, the white guy who was in the process of stealing their land, and has been stealing their land, he's represented as the good guy. That's how it happens. That's how it happens. And they did the same thing with Africans, black people, us. That, you know, you're barbarians. I mean, look at them. They're savages out there in Africa. Wasn't the case. I mean, these savages are the ones that taught you about sanitization. The ones that taught you about windows, about soap, about how to properly, you know, bury, you know the dead, and the ones that we can go on and on about religion, philosophy, monotheism, chemistry, sciences, mathematics. I mean, the world's first alphabet. I mean, going on and on. Yet you're talking about those savages, right? Those savages that produced, you know, two of the world's first, you know, of the world's first three universities. All this stuff. It's because the conqueror has appropriated our images, has rewritten history. Which is, you know, revisionist is just a nice word of saying a lie of history. And because of that, because many of us have been devoid of that history, we have bought those narratives hook, line, and sinker, and we walk around and we will quote, you know, and refer to white men who would have enslaved us and did enslave our ancestors as founding fathers. And the sooner that we reject these narratives and reject these revisionists, the lie of history that they have put out there for so many times, the sooner we do that, the better we'll be we will be for it. The better our communities will be for it, and I would say, quite frankly, the better humanity would be for it, because it's happening all over the world. It's happening in Australia. It's been happening in Australia. It's anywhere where you have seen the wretched face of colonization and shadow slavery. These things have been going on for quite some time, and it's time to stop them in perpetuity, so that it ceases. It ceases as we know it. But it's up to us. It's really up to us. You know, anybody else? Rubina.
I believe that, to answer your question, or the question that a lot of us may have, the fear that, generally speaking, the white people have of black people is mostly because of their realization of how strong our people are, like emotionally, mentally, physically, even after all of these things that they've done to, like, the ancestors, and how we've been able to continue to, like, press on and to do something, even though we, like, started from the ground, or they, you know, put us to the ground, and now we're building up. And the scariest thing is that they know that once we get, like, the education that we need, or a lot of people are becoming more educated, now is when they're able to speak out and to do different things. So that's why they feared a lot of the civil rights activists, because they knew, they started to know their rights and what they can do and how they can cross the line or, like, push the limits but still be able to, like, get some type of change. So for them, the only way they're able to continue to oppress us or to stay in their positions is to, like, use the power they have and use all these loopholes and push their limits and stay in power, because they know if they lose that power, I don't believe that they'll be able to be, like, as successful as they are, because the people that they brought to this country or, like, stole from, they're the same people that taught them everything that they know. Mm-hmm. They learned what they're doing, they learned from observing others or trying to figure out ways to bring us down. So I don't think they'll be able to stay in the positions of power that they are if our people would be as educated as they could be. So they're just hiding. Like, basically all the resources are being hidden from us, and just, like, trying to keep us in the same position that we are so we can't have access to everything else. And a lot of black people don't realize, like, oh, what's the point of like being educated, or what's the point of me getting involved in this and that? Like, that's where the knowledge is. Like, if you're not gonna try to go out there and find it, you're gonna be stuck in the same place you are, and that's what they want. That's what they want to happen, so they can keep the power.
Right, and like you said, resources, and also the resources that they use to build up their empire comes from where? Comes from, you know, places like the continent of Africa. It comes from, you know, places like, you know, throughout, you know, South America, where we're seeing all kinds of, you know, different mineral resources, you know, coming out of these places that are being, you know, expropriated and plundered, all for the proper all for the benefit of Western capital, and at the same time, you see the people who live on that land living in abject poverty, because they're the last to benefit from those resources. So yeah, I could not agree with you more. Anybody else before we move on? Anybody
else? I was going to talk about the corrupt justice system, because I noticed that we were all talking about the justice system in one way or another, and how they're basically targeting African Americans more so than other people. And so one thing that we should do as people is, you know, make sure that our police officers are culturally competent in the communities that they're trying to go and serve. It's ridiculous that you can have somebody who's completely unaware of the entire culture of like African American people go into the communities and then assess something as, you know, violent when it could just be, you know, fear, as you mentioned before. And so you can't have police officers going into the forest when they don't even know anything about the people. And another thing that also goes along with that is the truth of the actions of the police officer. So we all know that all police officers aren't bad. And that's one reason why we have to make sure that we can account for both the actions of the police officer and the actions of the individual, and that's why cameras are a necessity. And that's why another reason we must push for, you know, cameras on the police officers. So that's what I wanted to add.
Yeah.
I think a lot of also police have fear too. I think that the worst thing you can have is a fearful policeman with a gun. I think that they should, I don't know how, I guess fear training they should put in there, not just don't shoot first, but let's like understand, like, maybe courage training, I don't know. And there's like, assess the situation before you get afraid. And I know that's a lot, probably hard for a lot of people, because I guess fear is very natural for us. But I think fear is one of the biggest reasons why a lot of people die. Other than, you know, racism, but also the fear of, okay, he's going for my gun, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. But if we take that, erase that from people's minds, then I think some of the problems will be solved.
Yeah, and that's not even just like a fearful cop with a gun. They have so many resources outside of using guns. It's ridiculous. Like, I'm writing a paper on it. They have pepper ball launchers, the rap system, super soft, sage guns, rubber bullets, tasers, barracudas, net cannons. They have endless resources that they can use to incapacitate someone if they're trying to, like, resist them or if they're trying to harm them, and yet they think, oh, no, I'm just going to pop you in your head right quick, and then say, oh, I was afraid for my life.
And then get off of it and not go to jail.
But I had nothing in my hand but a pack of gum or whatever, a wallet. But you have everything in your mother on you, which I have a wallet, and I'm certainly scarier than you are. And you have your arm with so many things in it.
Exactly. Like, I saw a video the other day. They shot, it was like 5 years ago, they shot a man who was paralyzed in a wheelchair. How is he scary? This man can't even walk towards you.
Doesn't it seem like he's going to run you over
with his wheelchair?
Doesn't it seem like they're playing a video game? Because, like, some of these incidences, I just keep imagining, like, this is something, like, out of a video game. It is so unreal. Like, how, like, it's such a huge disconnect from, like, reality. Like, these are human lives. Like, you're acting like, you know,
you're acting like this is an animal that you're shooting in the woods, or like a roach that you're stepping on in your house.
Hunting game.
That's exactly why Black lives have to matter. You see, you can't say all lives matter when, you know, up to this point, it's very evident that Black lives haven't been mattering in the lives and eyes of the justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the whole movement of Black Lives Matter is about. It's not saying that any other lives matter less, as we all mentioned, but it is saying that we need to focus on the justice system and how it affects Black people.
Exactly. It's saying you can't treat us like animals and go shooting around like it's open season. We are people.
It's crazy because in most of the videos, even if it's more than one cop on the scene, and they're trying to, like, hold down one person. They use so much force. And whenever I see the videos, I just think of, like, all the anger they have in them towards. And I'm like, why do you have anger towards black people?
What are you mad about?
Especially
you know?
Yeah, and most people are like, oh, they're coming after, they're coming after stuff that wasn't even yours to begin with.
It's like barbaric, and it's like a, I mean, you said it's like a game. It's like a living nightmare, and you know, and with that, I just want to, you know, take a brief break, you know, and from our sponsors, and our sponsors are always Revolutionary Hip Hop. So we're gonna take a brief break. We listen to Brother Ali's American Nightmare. We're gonna finish with the second half of the show after this break.
Crack another brew. Ghetto public school, leak rain from the roof. Troubled youth was your name straight from the womb. Cycle coming true. Your father flew through the same trap door that you one day plummet through. Ain't nothing new, rugged like a 100 proof. Place where they say the easy way is jumping from the roof. Police coming through. They rough, handcuffed, grab nuts, point guns to you no matter what you do. How to quote unquote justice move. If you protect us, then who protect us from you? There's a couple youth workers, but they few. Far between, they can't reach but one or two. You only busting loose when you got numbers glued to your back, whether that's a jersey or a jumpsuit. You wonder what you do to make the world punish you. That's when your sense of right and wrong start to come and loose. Hustlers recruit right in front of school. Fuck the rules, you literally got nothing to lose. They show it on the news, then people judging you. As if you had a fucking chance, this is what you choose. Can't sing nothing but the blues. American nightmare, the God's honest truth.
It's an American nightmare. We don't play fair, we take life here. It's a
grown. I'm lost all alone, out on my own, my mind gone, pocket with stones that I pitch to these unknowns. Cops in the room, undercover, trying to bust us, but cops get their heads blown. I'm in a dead zone, I ain't supposed to be here. I'm a ghost with a pistol blowing smoke, don't need here. See here, the fine print, you ain't read that. The I don't give a fuck part, approach you where you sleep at. Black, your whole world seems to fade to it, and I'm a passerby, acting like I ain't doing. Plain stupid, the drugs must have done an extra bleed. I get the dry heat, nauseous cough, I can't vomit. Stomping, wicked this way coming, the ending of days. God's promise has sprung it to the point where we at now. And I have come too far for me to back down. These devilish ways, these voices I hear from the grave speak to me, saying, kill that motherfucker, I'm a slave to it.
It's an American nightmare, we don't play fair, we take life here.
Scarface, rap a lot, yeah. American Nightmare. So once again, we're back, and as I said before, I'm joined by Ryan, Robina, Caroline, Zarin, and so Soliana, right? Did I get it right?
Yes.
Yeah. awesome. Five, you know, activist-oriented students, you know, and it's just refreshing doing things that, quite frankly, folks that are, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, you know, older than them are not doing. You know, some of those folks are getting ready for happy hours, and to me, it's just kind of like an empty existence. It's not that you can't balance with, you know, your social life and other things, but we should, especially if these things impact your community, especially if you are of color and your communities have been catching hell and continue to catch hell. You need to find some time within your lives, with even if it's a couple hours a month, to try to find some time to some way to give back. And that, and this is not to those folks who are working two and three jobs and are catching hell because of the capitalist nightmare, because you know that, you know, they can barely find, you know, a moment to even get a second to catch some rest. I'm talking about folks who are well-to-do. You know, the so-called black middle class, black upper middle class that you know, when it comes time, you just turn on like the BET Awards and you see whatever ratchet rapper that's out there. You'll see a whole class of them. You know, when they flash the camera out to the audience and you'll see like whatever. You know, just name your favorite ratchet rapper, and you'll see them, and you'll see these, you know, these grown ass black folks in the audience just shake. I mean, just the songs that are just like, I mean, it's honestly the Ku Klux Klan could not have developed, you know, a better instrument to psychologically decapitate black people than this creation. I don't even want to call it hip hop because I love hip hop. I want to, you know, call it like this corporate hip hop Frankenstein kind of stuff, that cookie cutter. But I digress. I want to ask you guys a question that has to do with there's actually a couple of questions I'd like to kind of lead off with. You know, I don't know where to start, because I want to get into student loan debt and talking about that and packaging that with capitalism. Because right now the average college student in the United States is faced with, you know, about $33,000 of debt, and we know in the United States right now there's about $1.5 trillion of student loan debt that's floating out there. $1.5 trillion, all right, of student loan debt that is floating out there right now. One in five American households is facing, debt because of student loans. And I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, because it seems kind of like weird, man. You live in this country that is the most opulent country, right? All right. Yes, it's a concentrated opulence. It's, you know, wealth is very much concentrated at the top, you know, 1 to 10%. But still a lot of wealth. But you have all these other countries that don't even have a fraction of the same wealth that the U.S. has. But they have universal health care. I mean, they have universal education from pre-K all the way to, if you want to get your PhD or your MD. They have these. I mean, we're talking about countries like Venezuela. You talk about Norway, Sweden. I mean, you talk about Finland, all these different countries. You just go on and on and on. Like, what are your thoughts? Like, have you given a critical analysis of capitalism and your relationship with capitalism and so forth?
For one, I think capitalism is very destructive of the people of the nation that it serves, because as inside the United States, as you see, there's a huge gap between the rich and the poor. It's like the top 0.1% owns, you know, 90% of the wealth in the country, basically. And so you have the bottom 90% having as much money as the top 0.1%. And so it's ridiculous that you have a country that's so wealthy as the United States with a GDP of $14+ trillion a year, and then you still have institutions like colleges that are still being capitalized. You have the economy, I mean, the people that are serving the country, you know, inside middle class, their children are growing up to be in debt to the people in the top 0.1%. So it's like you don't even like get rid of this cycle. And so you have to kind of realize that we have to do something about this wealth that's concentrated at the top 0.1% and use that to build our, I guess you could call it, infrastructure of like the education system, so that we can actually at least gain a college education, which is equivalent to a high school education, without being in insurmountable debt by the time we graduate.
Yeah. Anybody else? Robina, did you have something to chime in on that?
Honestly, I don't know. There's a lot of things that I think are backwards about this country. I don't even know how to explain it. I just feel like the other, because I know, like, in the Netherlands, they have, like, a socialist society, and you barely see homeless people, you know, walking the streets there. And they usually give people who would be in situations like that, they give them, like, monthly allowances and stuff. And I'm not sure, but I don't think those countries have much trade going on with other countries the way or to the level that America does. But I don't know what America does with its money that we can't afford to help.
Sure you do. It spends on military. It spends on a super bloated military. And they put you in a fair to control you, keep you in fair to control you. You know, that, yeah, we need more military. We need more nuclear weapons. You know, it would take, you know, less than 100 nuclear weapons to destroy the world, but yet the United States has over 10,000 nuclear weapons. You know, so they're spending all this money on military bases, has close to 1,000 military bases throughout the world. No other country does or has that. It just keeps its population, that its population, that the vast majority of Americans have no critical thinking skills whatsoever. They don't think about these things, these damn things, because they're never introduced to them, because they spend their time watching reality shows or CNN, which is, and MSNBC and Fox News, which are like reality shows in and of themselves, you know, with all these different characters, but that's where the money goes. That is exactly where the money goes. And I recently learned, you know, for instance, you look at Finland. Finland has the best educational system in the world. But you look at in Finland, if a woman gets pregnant in Finland, all right, she has a year paid, full paid maternity leave. So whatever her job is, whether it was a teacher or a doctor or a nurse, whatever her job was, She is able to take a year off, and the government of Finland pays her for the entire year, full payment of what she's making per every 2 weeks, per month, what have you. And then after that year, when she goes back to work, she's given a $700 a month stipend every month to help supplement the cost of raising that child. So she goes back to work, and then every month for the next year, she's given $700, the equivalent of $700, that goes towards whatever, diapers, formula, what have you. $700. That's how they're using their money. They're using their money to create lives, to cultivate human life by providing mothers and the father. The father of the child gets something like 3 or 4 months. Paid paternity leave. But yet Americans are running around here not asking, not demanding of these things, because they're, quite frankly, oblivious to it. And then those ones that do know about it, you have a large section that will, we know no socialism here. We don't need no socialism. So what the heck are you getting for your capitalism then? What are you getting for your capitalism? What the hell are you getting for your capitalism? What are you getting for your capitalism? And watch the glossed over look on their eyes when they have to think and try to figure it out. Freedom, business owners. I mean, and it's crazy. Since the 70s, since the 1970s, in regard to workers, the pay rate for workers has been stagnated since the late 70s, meaning that when you factor in inflation, payment, income to workers has stagnated. I want everyone to listen to this. Has stagnated.
has stagnated since the 70s, factor in inflation. However, since the 70s, factory owners, all right, those CEOs, whatever, you know, CEOs of corporations, you know what? Theirs has gone up 400%. Their pay has gone up 400%. 400%. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So what's this whole talk about this trickle-down economics? It never trickles down. It's this bunch of lies that are put out there because they know Americans are too dumb to figure it out most of the time on their own because the media is not telling them. So once again, I digress right back to, you know, back to independent media, what you guys are doing, having these conversations with your friends and spelling it out like you're doing, you know, Ryan. I know you're big on note-taking and big on facts and data, having that conversation and then showing it to your friends, breaking it down to your roommates. You know, like, look at this. Yeah, I'm not making this. Look at this. This is what we need to be demanding. And don't say it's not possible, because when someone tells you, looks you in the face with that defeatist look and says, oh, I can't do it, we can't do it, it's not possible. Well, you tell them this, especially if they're black. You tell them this. Well, you know what? What if folks in the 60s and the 70s took that attitude? We can't do it. We can't do it. What if Harriet Tubman took that attitude? We can't do it. I can't free them. What if they said that? Then you know what? Yeah, we wouldn't be having these conversations, because perhaps all of us would be, you know, in servitude right now, in physical enslavement, you know, and not the mental enslavement that many of us are continue to be under. But it's crazy. It's like you have to pinch yourself. Like, wake me up. Is this a dream? Is this a nightmare that people really don't, you know, are not demanding these things, don't understand this? And Finland doesn't have even, like, this much, this tiny amount of the U.S. GDP. I mean, we're talking about $13 trillion is the U.S. gross domestic product. $13 trillion. Finland doesn't have that. It's a few hundred billion. Like, but it's how they're spending their money. It's crazy how people are taxed and what they get in return for their taxes. We're taxed 54% of what we're taxed on goes to the military. Without your say, Ryan, without your say, it'd be one thing if you said, okay, you pick what you want where you want your taxes to go. Oh, I want it to go on to homeless shelters. I want it to go to this organization. I want it to go to this organization. I want it to go to education. But you can't even do that. You can't even do that.
Yeah, our money is killing lives, you know, without our permission. It's just crazy about that. And, you know, like, just recently I heard, like, President Obama is sending troops to Cameroon, over 3,000 troops. It's just like, yet again, like, why? Why are they there? Like, what is their purpose? And then this whole notion is like, oh, to ensure, you know, there's democracy and human rights are being upheld.
No.
And
can't even human rights are being
you
upheld,
know, but we're dropping bombs. You know, like, our president, the drone king, has, you know, killed countless lives.
We have to take a stand. I love what you said, have to take a stand, because that's what Dr. King would do. And anyone that's out there that could be listening or whatever that does not understand history, you know, Dr. King was completely against imperialism, was completely against the military-industrial complex. So if you really think that he would be supporting, you know, drones and so forth, and I'm... Yeah. And all these different things. I mean, you're kidding yourself. You're intellectually dishonest in your understanding of history, And when you talk about the thing, I this is something I should have brought up earlier when we were talking about the whole Black Lives Matter, because you talk about it. You know, you talk about Libya, you talk about Somalia, you're talking about, you know these other countries. You know, you can talk about Congo. When we're looking at Black Lives Matter, you have to ask yourself: Do Black Lives really matter, or is it just Black Lives in the U.S.? Because what about those Black lives that have been decimated by way of, for instance, the 2013, you know, bombing campaign of Libya? There's a lot of Black lives there that were lost because of that, and that aftermath that continues to go on. There's a lot of Black lives that have been lost,
you know, in different places in East Africa that have been bombed and have had drone attacks like Somalia, Yemen, which is right next door, you know, which is right next door to East Africa, right there, you know, we have to ask ourselves these tough, honest questions, because if we're really about it, when we're thinking about those Congolese, we're thinking about those Congolese that continue to lose their lives because of Western greed and plunder and so forth. You know, it's you know, we look at AFRICOM. You know, I'd written that down. AFRICOM, which is the recolonization of Africa. We're talking about the United States is building military bases throughout the continent of Africa right now as we speak, continue building, and it has been doing so going back to 2007. You know, started with the Bush regime and the Obama regime has exponentially expanded that. AFRICOM, and when you look at, you know, if you look at AFRICOM, you go to the Department of Defense and their webpage on AFRICOM, it says it explicitly in there that they're trying to secure strategic resources. But who are you trying to secure them for? Those Africans or yourself? It's clearly for yourself. For yourself, you know. But yeah, I'm at a loss of words. Anybody else have anything to say regarding that? All right, you know, because I know we deviated from the whole capitalist thing, but can you guys imagine a framework in which you would have no student loans waiting for you? Because I don't know. How many of you guys have taken out student loans? I'm trying to tell you, they're really waiting for you, and you cannot run. You cannot run from them. You cannot run from them. You cannot declare.
But the government was willing to give 0% interest rate loans to Wall Street.
Yeah, exactly. Wall Street.
You know.
The people who need them the least.
Our taxpayer dollars, too, at that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can't even use our own money to fund our own education. We're bailing out these ridiculous criminals that almost, you know, brought down the entire financial system.
I know
system.
Their choice to do it, even because they almost brought down the entire. Even worse, we have enough firepower in terms of nuclear energy to blow up the world three times over, and we still need to put more money into defense and, like, manufacturing weapons, really?
Yep, apparently the Earth ain't enough. We need to blow up all the other planets.
Yeah. Without a doubt. We have time for maybe one more topic before we adjourn this like power pack show. Are there any topics that you did? I see a whole bunch of notes that you wrote down, Ryan. So I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to get off your chest, so to speak. You know, same thing with anybody. You know, you spoke about a lot of things. You know, regarding the drones and the new report by Intercept and Jerry Scahill and the staff reporters over there.
I think it has to do with the Republican debates. I think a lot of them are talking about Planned Parenthood and defunding Planned Parenthood, but it's interesting because Planned Parenthood does so much more than abortion.
Yeah, way much more.
They're trying to defund help for poor people. They're trying to defund help for people who need it. That's what they're trying. They're not trying to defund abortion. They're trying to defund the little help that people have now. They're trying to get rid of it.
Yeah, think about it also like this. So those children who aren't supported, they're going to grow up with their parents who may or may not be together. Where's the funding going to go for that?
Exactly.
They're going to be in
you don't care about the baby outside the baby.
Corrupt institutions of foster care, because I know a lot of information about foster care because my mother is actually a social worker, so she's been into many institutions in this area alone, and they're all very, very corrupt. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to go into institutions like that, end up going and having pretty, not necessarily bad lives, but not where they could have been if there has been better institutions even in the foster care system. And so, you know, we have to build up everything. We can't even focus on just, you know, abortion, because the repercussions of getting rid of abortion is so far off.
People
like
die.
So many.
Women will literally die if they have no. People start having illegal abortion, the women will die so much more than they are, because people will still get abortions, but it would be crazy and illegal if they weren't passed.
And here's the thing: it's like when you hear these like Republicans, you know, talking about these issues, it's easy to catch them, you know, in their hypocritical, contradictory like lies left and right. All you got to do is like, if you really care, I mean, because they talk about all, you know, Bush talked about it, you know, all these, you know, these lives that you know, care about children, you know, children's lives, and they shouldn't, you know, children shouldn't be being killed. But if they really didn't care about, if they really did care about children being killed, would they be waging war? What about, are those children at the bottom, you know, when the plane is flying over, you know, Afghanistan or what have you, right before that plane drops that missile or that bomb or that drone is launched, aren't those kids? Because we know the vast majority of people that are killed by drones and U.S. airstrikes are civilians, and many of which are children under the age of 16. What about the 500,000 Iraqi children that died in the 90s because of the U.S. sanctions, directly because of the U.S. sanctions? What about their lives? What about their lives? What about the lives of Palestinian children that are dying because of the apartheid state that is Israel and you know, what Israel continues to do to Palestine, East Jerusalem, you know, and West Bank and so much more? What about that? You know, what about their lives? What about do their lives, you know, do their lives matter, or is it just that you're trying to pander to black folks who are naive enough to, you know, by saying, oh, you know, this many, you know, black children are aborted? What it also, if you want to stop abortion, like you said, why don't you pump resources into the community? Because the more resources that are pumped into the community, you'll have less, exactly. Pump the resources into the community, and you're gonna see, you know, premature pregnancies decrease, you know, exponentially. You're gonna see it drop exponentially, big time, you know. But those conversations aren't happening. That kind of, you know, sociological, you know, data and stuff is rarely ever discussed in any shape, form, or fashion.
So we have to like cut taxes on the rich, and so where is that money going? It's going to the richest spot, because as you said before, you know, the income hasn't really increased much since the 70s. You really think if we keep on funding money, and that was when like the United States economy was growing the most during the 70s. But as you mentioned, the richest pockets grew by 400%, but, you know, these communities have not received any of the benefits of the United States increasing in wealth. And then, of course, the crash happens, and now everybody's worse off.
Right.
So you have to ask yourself, are you the ones who's benefiting from the tax cuts to the rich, or is it the rich?
It's by design.
Exactly.
Really, it's by design. You know what's funny? If you look at the back of your dollar bill, you know that pyramid that's there? That's exactly where we're at right now, right? All the wealth is going right to the top, and all of us at
Everybody
the bottom,
it's like nothing.
Poverty.
Mm-hmm.
By design.
People that do the most don't get what they deserve.
Exactly. Yeah, people working upwards of 60 hours a week and still can't even make, you know, their payments for their house.
But yet you're told, you know, that capitalist dream,
that if you work hard enough, what
about that woman that you see every day that's busting her butt, you know, cleaning dirty bathrooms, and then gets off and goes to another job and works, you know, another, you know, several hours. Well, and she's been in that job for 10, 15 years. If that's not hard work, I don't know what is. So what about that? What about the American dream? Where is she catching a break? And that's not novel. That is not novel. There are so many. I mean, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds. We're talking about millions of examples of people that work hard every single day, day in and day out, and have been doing so for year in and year out, and don't catch a break. But here's the thing. If you can alleviate some of that by provide that's where that person is provided with universal health care, which we still don't have in this country. That person is provided with an opportunity for upward mobility because they have the option to go to community college or then 4-year institution or so forth. We have, here's this, a livable wage.
Yeah.
So that woman now doesn't have to work two jobs, one full-time job and then two part-time jobs, because you know what? Her full-time job pays her a livable wage. What about that? So therefore, the job of being a janitor or custodian or a housekeeper or something like that is not seen as some menial job. It's seen as something that I can have that can actually help sustain my family, and that's enough. And I can come home, and I can do homework with my kids. I can actually play with them. I can see them. I'm not seeing them for a tiny, tiny bit of time every single day because I got to go home and sleep and then get and do it over and over and over again. But you look at these other countries that we discussed. You know, they have livable wages. Have livable wages, not a minimum wage, but a livable wage. That's the humanity in it. Think about it. It's all in the words. I'm giving you a minimum wage. Giving you a minimum wage. That's letting you know that it's already coming at you, you know, that it's something that's way below what you should be getting. How about a livable wage? I'm paying you a wage that you can live on, Ryan. You can live on this wage. You can live on this wage. All right? And then you're not paying money, you know, out the wazoo to go to school because you know what? You can go for free. It's subsidized by the government because you know what? You get that additional degree, that money that you get from that from that your new profession, that's going into the economy. It's going into the economy. But in a capitalist society, they look out for who? They look out for the haves first and foremost. It's a debtor society. In other countries where it's a socialist society or an amalgam of socialism and something else, they're also looking out for the human being. They're not just looking out for the haves and saying, you know, we got to make sure that there's a strong thread of debt that's running through the society. But we live, it is a debtor society. It's a debt. Thank good, and you know, soon they may be going back to debtor's prisons probably, you know.
They do that in Washington. I heard about that.
Yeah. So, any last comments? We'll start from you, and we'll go around, and then we'll say sayonara, or tuto anana, which means see you later in Kiswahili.
I would just like to say I hope there are changes because at the end of the day, all these changes will help everybody. This is not just changes going to help black people, white people. Everybody does what they're supposed to do. We can all be happy, or just equal, or something.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to note, we talked a lot about politics and voting and everything. They're already focused on that. Like, I don't know if you guys heard, but it was a few years ago. The Supreme Court, they cut out this part of the Voting Rights Act where, like, initially it had these pretty much stipulations that said if this is a state that has had a history of racism and that has disenfranchises voters and is trying to keep especially minorities down, you have to go through the Attorney General in order to get any new law that you're going to make about voting passed. Well, some states, they're like, oh, well, that law was written so 50-some years ago, that doesn't apply anymore. So they struck it down and they haven't written down any new stipulations. So now these states can change their voting laws. And Alabama just now changed their voting law so that you need an ID in order to be able to vote. We don't have that in Maryland, but they now have it in Alabama. And in order to make sure that many minorities would not be able to vote, they shut down 30 DMVs
mm-hmm.
in different areas that had a population that was mostly people who voted for Obama. They claim, oh, no, we just shut down the DMVs for blah, blah, blah. No, you shut down so that these people won't be able to vote so that they won't be a threat to who you want to be in office. And things like that need to stop. Like, we can't vote for anybody if they're telling us you can't vote at all because you don't have your ID and you need that because you're going to try to commit voter fraud. I'm an election judge. I've never seen anyone commit voter fraud coming into my precinct. So I'm entirely confused.
Yeah, just we have to continue these conversations, like real conversations. Like, it's, you know, this matters to everyone. This matters to, you know, your mom, dad, you, your siblings, your future kids. Like, imagine how bad it is getting right now. Like, how much worse it will be for the future generations. If we do not stop this madness, then we will not get any better.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we as individuals actually have to take a stand, you know. We have to talk to people within our own friend groups. We have to talk to people outside of our friend groups. We have to be willing to actually change what's happening inside of America. We do have power as individuals. We can contact our senators. We can just send them an email. They actually do respond. Many people actually don't know that. You could actually join a movement that's going on right now.
Right on.
Any movements that happen, you know, at least try to take part in it. If you think you can do something, join the movement, add on whatever you can. You know, one more person is another one person that we didn't have before. It's another person that we can add towards the change of the United States.
Right on. No, I couldn't agree more. That's a good note to end on, is to think about joining an organization within your community. If there's not an organization, create an organization. You know, it was Kwame Ture who, you know, otherwise known as Stokely Carmichael, you know, at one time said, you know, we need to organize. And he was a big proponent of people joining organizations, creating and joining organizations. You join an organization, and think about it. Any movement that you can think of that inspires you, whether it was the civil rights movement, the Black Power struggle, whether it was, you know, our brothers and sisters in Southern Africa who fought long and hard a protracted struggle to get the yoke of white supremacy and colonization off their back. If you think that these things just happened, you know, just out of thin air without people having conversations, you're kidding yourselves. People came together, had meetings after meeting after meeting, and said, okay, you're going to do that, I'm going to do this. All right, that will be our jobs. You'll do this. That's you're in charge of this. People had tasks, and it started to spread, and it started to build. But it started with conversations. It started with real conversations. It's hard to mobilize any mass movement if you have a group of people who are vastly uneducated about critical issues. You know, I guess you can do it. If you want to lead by like dictatorship and, you know, you want to be that figurehead the whole entire time. But if you want to do it the right way and get people to buy in, you got to organize them and get people invested in that movement. Get them where they feel invested, where they actually are invested in that movement. They have tasks and they have responsibilities. And it's not just this top-down, I'm giving you orders. But, no, it comes from the bottom up. You know, many Black Panthers, you know, spoke about this many, 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 many times. You know, it comes from the bottom up, that push, that vanguard. And so we have to do what we can to, as you said, Ryan, to be a part of it, to get involved, not just to complain. It's important to complain. Yes, there's a role in complaining. I mean, you see shit that's wrong. Yeah, you have a right to complain. But those folks that are followers of yours, that are friends of yours, that are family, that follow your words and your steps, wow, it looks so much better when you're complaining and you have a track record of doing stuff to combat those issues that you're discussing, you know, even if it's starting community-wide media collectives. Someone's got to be educated by way of the airwaves, whether it's through social media, whether it's through an online blog, which is, like, fairly inexpensive. We chip in money here and there. Boom, all we need is, you know, about $30 a month, and we can do this, you know, help host an online blog. People can do this. People can do what we're doing right now, all right? So, you know, with that being said, I just want to say, you know, thanks for joining us, you know, today on Your World News, and thank you for the student activists / journalists / scholars / Pan-Africanists. You know, we can go on and on. Thank you for joining me and being the co-host, the great co-host that you were today, and we're going to continue to do this again. So we're going to try to aim to do this again next Friday and keep pushing this this revolutionary train, you know, in the right direction. And so I say, do not ride the fence. As Deku said, you cannot ride the fence. So I was going to play Ride the Fence, or should I play Dig It? Two different options from a group from Oakland, California, known as Deku. Let me actually, we played Ride It before. I'm going to play Dig It. This is Deku with their track just called Dig It. So, as you all should know, this is Your World News, the place where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive.
go with the communist manifesto. Gorillas in the mix, the Guevara and Manesto. So
what about it with an Astro now?
Yo, throw a blow for the Mac and do the whole toe. Cause the Lincoln brothers might get hung. Rhetoric pulled from the dick of my mouth. Say something deficit.
Money,
that's the link.
Oh my god, it's a good left. That's 25.
And I just dip as I flinch and wave my.
We get away with that.
So you can get with it, it's a twist. Cause we're overthrow like Kwame Nkrumah. Spread around the world as if it were a vicious rumor. Man, cut the record like a country, cut the tumor from a brain.
We're all too dumb to feel the pain.
From 400 years of exploitation, anesthesia provided by your local TV station. Patience is not a virtue.
I ain't waiting.
Turn it over like Bush did a boatload of hate.
Geronimo, you jack a prick.
Lyrics, 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 can't get lyrics out of sample, didn't clear it. Point, point, says, survival, that's the spirit. Spirit, plan out so bad that I can do that. I was doomed since my native birth to be the wretched of the earth. Never had a dream that was American.
They go to make you Cherokee.
It's American.
That ain't nothing new.
Told the streets where they would go, whoever paid that.
Got minimum wage, got two.
One up. Here we go. We out, y'all.